everybody, and welcome to Cinema Roulette. We are back today, and as you notice, we don't really have an opening joke or a spoiler warning, even though there will be some spoilies here, because we're here recording filler.
Welcome to a filler episode, baby! We don't even try to disguise this one as a topic wheel or some movie suggested by another podcast. It's just bland filler.
It's literally just filler, and we will fully admit to that because we need a little more time to catch up on television.
I mean, we do have Preacher season 2 recorded, but that's going to be a long episode. I don't feel like editing that this week, so we're doing this one.
Yes, and I think it's going to come out late as is anyway on Saturday, right?
Yeah.
So yes, welcome.
So sorry we're a day late.
Yep, sorry we're a day late, and welcome to the filler episode.
Yeah, we're doing our final spin thing, but on a less impressive wheel of last year's movie month.
Yeah, the one that was picked by me.
No.
Which one?
It'd be last year's compared to now.
Oh, right. Okay, yes.
The one that's picked by you is this November. Coming up soon.
I keep forgetting. It's weird because we've already recorded it, so my mind sometimes confuses that.
That's fair.
And we never talked about last year's movie month, huh?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Because at the start of it, I said we're not going to, and then at the end of it, I said we were going to.
Oh. So. All right, well, let's do it.
Welcome. Okay, so we did 8 movies. We're going to be talking completely openly about them. If you don't want them spoiled, I guess tough shit.
Yep. We'll see you in a different
episode. You're not allowed to turn off this episode. We legally put it in your brain.
Ah, oops. Shit. Really? For this episode, that's the one you legally put in their brain?
Yeah, I didn't realize marking it as filler was on a psychological exam, and it's filling in parts of a brain that you don't need anymore.
Well, sorry about that, guys. I guess space you could have used to, you know, study or hold useful information is now filled with us. You're welcome.
No, you were just going to remember show intros. Don't lie to me. And also, who really needs to be able to control their bowel?
Oh, no. We'll have mass shittings
more
everywhere.
Like, oh, shit.
Hey.
I need to stop spinning this screwdriver around.
Why?
Don't know. I have a feeling I'm going to drop it on my foot at some point.
Is it heavy?
No. Screwdriver, though.
It is, in fact, a screwdriver. By the way, guys, if someone ever pulls out a screwdriver as a weapon, don't fucking trust them.
Don't deal with that. That situation is lost.
Yep. Just walk away, man. Just walk away.
Anyway, we'll get in this now. We'll start with the first movie we cover in the fucking movie month with Mind Game, because god damn it.
Such a fucking insane ass trip of a movie, and you're right, it was literally just delving right into the fucking deep end.
Yeah, I was like hoping we get this movie in the middle or later on. No. First one.
And I also really like this episode because it's the last time I can remember both the audio and the video version coming out on the same day, on the day it was supposed to be released.
Hooray! And I didn't really have much to add with what we said in the episode. I thought we covered it, a first impression of it, pretty well.
Same, because, I mean, as far as first impressions go, you kind of just have to roll with it. There's nothing to really prepare yourself.
However, and I'm going to stick a pin in this, and it will be ironic later.
Ah.
But I took an experimental film class when we record that. And now, and for that, we needed to pick a film that counted as experimental and then do a paper on it. I chose Mind Game because looking up other things would be hard. I was actually going to do Satoshi Kon movies, but there's like no, for some reason, no critical paper or like, articles There's no articles discussing theme or looking deeper into Satoshi Kon films. Just a couple of newspaper interviews with him.
Really? Yeah, and it's like, you know, even though you could go into that yourself because it's so fun to talk about, for college you need to have references, yeah?
Yeah, you need sources.
Yep, so he was literally just physically unable to do that.
Yeah, so I went with Mind Game, because that's... It's also, honestly, even more experimental than Satoshi Kon stuff.
Yeah. Also, I
do always like to...
I was just going to say, I apologize if my throat seems a little raspy at times, so...
You should. How dare you. But I do also want to apologize for... I think it was in the 100th episode when we covered Paranoia Agent. That was like, oh, Satoshi Kon's one of, like, the only surrealists in anime. That's not true. The director of Mind Game goes fucking nutters.
Did you say that? One of the only...
Yeah, or I couldn't think of any others. No, this guy right here, director Mind Game, ton of surrealism.
It's not Takeshi Miike, is it? I'm thinking of...
No, that's a different director.
Yeah, I know he has a pretty straightforward name. I forget his actual name.
But back to the point. See, padding for time is fun, kids.
Masaki Yusa.
Yes. And he's still making stuff.
Yep.
I think he actually had a movie come out this year.
Oh, really? Sick.
I forget what it was. But in that paper, after going through the movie again and reading other articles and interviews with the director, I realized the movie's kind of depressing and positive at the same time.
Yeah, because, I mean, there are heavy themes in the movie.
There are, but after looking it over, what I got out of it was... That the... Say a director's name again.
Oh, sorry. Masaki Yusa. Or Yuasa. Sorry, Masaki Yuasa.
Yeah, with Masaki Yuasa, he has a weird outlook on the world of it's hopeless, but also just enjoy your time.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the setup of the movie, there is a god, but there's no afterlife. You are... Once you're dead, you... get made fun of, and then you're poofed out of existence.
Yeah, exactly. It is just hilarious, that movie's portrayal of God, in a way. It's something I found just fascinating was that God keeps changing forms because of how different people see God. So he's just constantly switching, blah, 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 like that.
And that was just the main character trying to perceive him. That's not even because of everyone's. It's just him.
Yep.
But you have the setup of this world where there is no later. Once it's over, it will end. And we even get in the whale, and the characters have to kind of come to accept that. We even see the old man who was trapped in there was about to give up as well, to put it lightly.
Yeah, in one of the darkest fucking moments of the movie. Like, Jesus.
I do also love how that moment... It doesn't have to fully explain anything. It shows a silent shot, and then it was like, yeah, you get it. Anyway, Dancing with Balloon Phalluses.
Yup.
It's this weirdly positive outlook on hopelessness of just like, okay, yeah, sure, this could all be over very quickly. But also, fuck the uncertainty. Let's just have a good time until it does end.
It is interesting, and then just under general themes and sensibilities, his works in general have been described as emphasizing love, kindness, and acceptance. The importance of communication, self-expression, and the ability to reveal one's true feelings are themes he's repeatedly expressed and highlighted in his works.
Yeah, in both movies I've seen from him, there is a dude who is not able to admit to the girl he loves that he loves her.
Yeah. Huh.
Which also, still go see Night is Short, Walk On Girl. Fun movie.
Mm-hmm. I still have not seen it, so.
I think it's still on Max at the moment.
Sick. And if you want...
Yeah, that's about...
Isn't he the guy who did Food Chain?
Yes.
Yeah,
he did that episode.
So if you've ever seen Adventure Time and you want a really good gauge for how fucking surreal he can be, he directed the Food Wars episode. or Food Chain.
Food Chain. And if you've seen Space Dandy, he did the fishing episode.
Oh, I love that episode so much.
Yeah, he's a fucking weird director, but I do love his movies. Because
yeah,
even though it's a lot at once, it never feels like just creativity for creativity's sake. It does feel like it has a point.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that point is emotionally scarring children. Yeah. It's just what he does.
Just what he does, you know. Well, that's also interesting, too. It says, in depicting emotions, Yuasa's intent is to maintain realism and authenticity, but the visuals through which the emotions are represented can be expressionistic. Moreover, it's his view that characters who move freely and unrestrained by strict realism can express a greater and more faithful range of emotionality.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So, yeah, really good director and just a psycho bonkers crazy movie that we both definitely recommend if you like surrealism.
And also the background was basically me just messing with color sliders and stretch tools.
Yes.
What else am I supposed to fuck do here?
Mm-hmm.
And then next up we had basically the exact opposite of this movie with Running Scared.
Yeah. Now, do you want to start with, like, any thought, extra thoughts or anything, or just the interesting fact that you told me?
I would like to correct one thing that we said, that I said in the episode.
Yeah.
I was wrong about Slevin. I said in that one that it would probably be just on the same level as Ryan Scared. No, Slevin was better than I remembered. I don't know why I remembered it worse than it was.
Yeah, Lucky Number Slevin was a great movie.
Great episode.
We'll get to that.
Well, actually, another correction is also a fun fact.
Yes.
Because in the episode, I say the final scene in the ice rink was done in blacklight, so that way they could avoid censors. That's wrong. The director actually wanted it to be in blacklight just because he thought it looked cool. It also costs like a good eighth of the movie's budget because setting up black lights for two different hockey rings is a pain in the fucking ass. But due to that scene, when they sent it to the MPAA, they only gave it an R rating when they thought it would be an NC-17, and it turned out blacklighting the ice ring scene saved it from being an NC-17 since all the blood looks black.
So the intention was not to have it have an R rating, but that's the result of what happened, basically.
Yeah, they just did because it looked cool. Then the ratings board was just like, yeah, that is cool. And also not too violent, so go nuts. And there is a reason for this movie to be so dark as it was. It's because the director was bored. Bored of PG-13, what would you call it? Oversaturation of the time?
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was so tired of seeing all the action movies that were PG-13 and showing nothing. He was like, you know what? Fuck it. I want to make a super dark movie that's violent and gritty like old crime movies like Death Wish.
Nice.
So that's what he did.
Yeah. And I can kind of see that because that was the trend at the time. This is before John Wick and the whole action revival of the mid-2010s. So,
yeah.
Yeah, back then it was still a bunch of PG-13 schlock. So that makes sense. And I respect him for doing that, honestly.
Even if now it's kind of meh.
Yeah, it's meh. And that's the whole thing. The movie is just meh, middle of the road. It's not terrible, but don't go out of your way to watch it, basically.
I'd still say it's slightly above if I had nothing else to watch on a plane.
Yeah, not quite that low, but
yeah, it's not that low, but if you got nothing better to do in a day, you want some mean-spirited shit with violence, you could do better, but you could do worse.
Exactly.
So, by better, I mean watch Shoot 'Em Up.
Yeah! Shoot 'Em Up is amazing. Yeah.
Old Boy was next because this wheel did not give us a fucking break.
Yeah, I know!
Come on, let me just quickly look at the order here.
And that's the thing, just also looking back on hindsight and at the order we got shit, wow, the wheel was just not letting up.
Yeah, we basically, like, we didn't, I guess lucky number 11 was kind of in the middle. They were just like, okay, here's your break. Anyway,
back to, yeah.
I guess we got a break with lucky 11 and kind of Heathers.
Yeah, Heathers was fun.
But first, Old Boy, I have nothing to say. I think this is honestly one of our best episodes.
Yeah, honestly, 100%. Like, there is nothing really we can add to it. It's just our thoughts still ring true. That was my first time ever seeing Old Boy, and wow, was it a fucking kick in the face.
Welcome to the fucking wow category.
Yes, so not much else to add or say on this movie. Just still a great movie. Definitely recommend watching it. Just be prepared just for
not
some...
not the dub.
Yeah, not the dub. Oh my god, no, not the dub. And just be prepared for some really fucked up shit.
And then next we had Bad Times at the El Royale.
Oh, such a good movie.
This movie gets better the more I fucking think about it and the more I look up about it. I just like it a lot.
Same. It's a really good movie. And even though it's 3 hours long, it does not feel its length. It's so well paced.
Ugh.
I still love the story that this is not the movie you thought you were watching at first.
I did. I watched this in my complete accident. That's just funny.
I end up being better than the Jeff Goldblum one in your eyes, yeah?
Oh, 100%.
Nice.
I can hardly even remember Hotel Artemis.
That was it. I couldn't remember the name. Hotel Artemis.
And I have a bunch of behind-the-scenes stuff for this movie.
Yeah, all right. Please tell me. I'm fascinated to hear.
First off, this was not mentioned in the behind-the-scenes on the Blu-ray, but it's a connection I've made in my brain, and I don't know if it was intentionally done or just a happenstance of fiction imitating life type deal.
Okay.
But there was a government program called Project Midnight Climax. And in this, they got blackmail on everyone.
Wow.
They had hotels with one-way mirrors to record people having sex with prostitutes or doing whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. Which could be what the El Royale was. It was just a setup, basically.
I can 100% see that.
I mean, it's hinted heavily that it was probably a sex tape of Kennedy on the...
Yeah, they basically say it's a sex tape of Kennedy without saying it's Kennedy.
But yeah, I was just like, because I remember hearing about this government program, and I was like, wait a minute, a bunch of hidden cameras getting blackmail on people in seemingly normal areas. Oh, fuck, is that Bad Times?
Yeah, okay, that's fascinating. So it 100% could have been inspired by that. That's cool. What was that operation called?
Yeah, I haven't listened
again
to the commentaries, so.
Yeah. What was that whole hotel thing called again in real life?
Project Midnight Climax.
Project Midnight Climax. Fascinating.
And I mean, blackmail was only one part of that project. There was a lot of shit our government did. And they've admitted to it. This isn't like, oh, tinfoil hat conspiracy. No, they admitted to it.
Yep. Oh, it was a sub-project of MK Ultra. Okay, that makes sense.
That's what I was trying to think of, where we drugged people.
Yup.
Yeah, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you look into all the crazy shit the U.S. Has done, then wow, yeah.
If you get depressed about that, look at all the failed attempts to kill Castro. It's funny.
It is. That is hilarious. And the story about, like, what was the one where they accidentally discovered South America? Look that one up.
That one doesn't have to do with America, though. That was Spain.
It doesn't. It's still just hilarious.
And fun facts with the movie. First off, it was all one big set because they just couldn't think of any way to try and cut between sets.
That makes sense. And I know that, like, there were brief scenes of, like, the robbery and stuff that didn't take place on it, but...
Yeah, they only had a few shots that were on actual outdoor set with nothing inside, but the rest of it was on one big elevated set, so that way they could have rain and fire and all that shit.
You could really control the environment and how it looked.
Yeah. An editing nightmare. In the main center of the hotel, there is a clock. That clock is accurate throughout the movie.
Oh, really?
So the time in the story is accurately represented on the clock. It doesn't just stay in one position.
That's fascinating. Wow. That's such a nice attention to detail.
You think that's a nice detail? All the things printed in the hotel, the cups, the candy, the felt rugs, the seats, all custom prints.
No shit.
Everything was custom in that set. There was nothing like, oh, we found this in a thrift store, it looked cool. No, they made sure everything matched what they were going for.
Wow. That probably took most of the budget right there.
Yeah. Or also shooting all of this on film, that it was also probably something that ate into the budget.
Oh, they actually used 35mm film?
Yep.
Nice.
To get that proper, 60s, 70s feel.
Okay, makes sense.
They also filmed without film lights. Anytime someone is lit, it is natural lighting from the set.
That's so cool.
Also, more on details. With Jeff Bridges' character, everyone's costume has subtle hints to who they actually are and will be revealed to be later. But the main one that was brought up in the behind the scenes is Jeff Bridges' priest. His pants don't match his shirt, telling you that he may not be a real priest.
Yep.
And it's not like, oh, if you look now, it'll be very gray pants compared to his black shirt. No, it's just a slightly off black. So if you're paying attention, you'll see it, but otherwise you'll just be like, oh, okay, that's a normal ass priest.
Yeah, and I was not familiar with that either, so that's just such a clever detail. And I remember you told me that. I'm like, wow.
Wow. And weird behind the scenes thing, Jeff Bridges just has an old-fashioned pan camera. He likes taking pictures behind the scenes or when he's doing script readings. It's a panoramic camera. Don't know why, just likes doing it.
Jeez.
Also, the color green doesn't really show up until about the end of the movie with, I forget her name. The one singer's dress, that's the only time you see green.
Oh, the character is what, Darlene?
Yes, that's it. Yeah, that's just a bunch of fucking fun facts. And just with the set, the director is a... he was a perfectionist in a way.
Mm.
But he just wanted the scene set up and the set made, and then he did still allow his actors to improvise if they needed.
Huh.
He wanted everything technical working, so that way, while on set, people could play around.
Makes sense, to just make the performances all that more natural and all that.
Yeah.
And then here's another fun fact for you, actually, about the movie. I have one now.
Oh, okay, fine.
It took 8 months... to plan a tracking shot in which Ham's character discovers the secret corridor of the El Royale and watches the hotel guests through the one-way mirrors. Rehearsals of the scene began in November 2017, with the cast working with a model of the hotel and small figurines to research how to perfect the timing. Due to the complexity of the scene in which Ervio was singing live for the 5-minute continuous shot, cast and crew members had to move silently in unison while wearing padded shoes and quiet clothes.
Fucking hell.
Using 30% reflective glass for the one-way mirrors, the scene took an entire day between 27 takes to accomplish.
Jesus.
Yeah. And then an additional scene in which Airview's character sings to cover up the noises caused by Bridges' character took 20 takes to complete.
Damn.
Furthermore, the set of a scene involving Billy Lee and his cult talking around the bonfire was actually, that scene was built outside the parking lot of the hotel set. So that's just kind of funny.
Also, shots like that, that's the reason they had the one big set, because they were like,
yep,
okay, we want to do this, but there's no fucking way you could hide, even if you try doing hidden cuts, there's no way you could do that with multiple sets.
Exactly. So they're just a very clever production, and I respect the shit out of it.
Yeah, it was really a passion project, and yes, the director got everyone he wanted. Even his cinematographer was someone he admired a lot. I forget the person's name.
Oh, though. That's so cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was excited to work with Jeff Bridges and yep, everyone. Those were his first choices. He was just like, yes.
Oh, that's so cool. So he literally got all his first choices.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Good for him. That's so cool. That's so cool.
I hope he makes more. I think he is working on a movie at the moment, but I forget.
Nice.
Yeah, that's, and again, nothing really in the episode that needs corrections, which is nice.
Yep.
And then next up, because breaks are hard, The Void.
The Void. Oh my goodness. I loved this movie so much.
Well, if only the editing it loved you back.
Oh man, so yeah, about that, I guess I will emphasize that for people who haven't seen, this was back when we were still using Butt Broadcaster, and this was kind of the point we decided to stop using Butt Broadcaster, because it broke up so many fucking times, and it wasn't just the audio, because we filmed video for this movie month as well, which I loved, and everything turned out perfectly. But as it happens, during the recording where the audio also skips, turns out the video also skips. So there are times when the audio is working, but the video is not. Then there are times where the video is working, but the audio is not. And then there's times where it's just both not working. And it was a bitch to edit.
It was just tech issues galore.
Oh my god, it's like the most tech issues we've ever had in an episode. So, and like, Justin was actually kind of surprised I did end up releasing the video version. He was like, dude, if it was too much effort, I would have totally understood.
Yeah, just that one gets the background, that's it.
Yeah, but no, I pulled through it and just, yeah, finished it. So that episode sucked technical wise, and I hate that that happened. So but other than that, yeah, Movie fucking great.
Movie's great. It almost didn't get made.
Yeah. I was going to say, tell them a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, first off, this movie was pitched basically just based around visual. The plot was thought of second after all the cool monster designs. They made a small trailer that got, that won a couple of awards at, what are they called? Film festivals. So they went into crowdfunding, got crowdfunding, got some people to back the other people to back the film. However, right before they were about to start shooting, one of the people backing the film backed out.
Yep.
So they had to stop everything. No one could be paid. Found a new person to replace them. And then another person backed out, so they needed to stop again for a few months to find another person to fund this damn thing.
Yeah, and I am glad that it pulled through and it was made, because, Jesus, it's one of the coolest horror films I've seen in recent years. Like, my God.
And they were on a fucking tight-ass schedule. It was, like, less than 30 days to shoot this whole thing.
Really? So it was done in less than a month?
Yeah. They were on a tight schedule. They fell behind a few times. The kind of cool thing is they were using a high school to be the hospital. But since the high school was so big, they were able to turn other parts of it into a studio. So they could make like the monsters and practical effects at the school and then not have to transfer it super far in order to get it to set.
Oh, that's really cool. Nice.
Yeah, they used everything they could on this place. Sure would have helped if the power didn't keep going out.
Did that happen?
A few times, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, the movie was was a bit of hell to make. Actually, do you remember the scene where there's like the pulsing hallway?
Yeah.
That's all practical.
Wow. 'Cause that's the thing.
They actually had like a bunch of crew and interns behind walls just slowly moving them back and forth.
Wow, I was going to say, like, 95% of the effects are practical in the movie, though, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, the vast majority are practical, and that's why I loved it, is because it really was harkened back to, you know, it was basically a love letter to John Carpenter-type films, like The Thing and all that, and it was just so well done. I loved the practical effects, and it was made in 2016, I believe, and just seeing all these practical effects done in recent years was just so cool to see. And the movie...
I still love the pipe zombie.
Yeah! Oh my god, is it the one where the pipe just keeps going through his head or something?
Yeah, it's bashing its head, but it's stuck on a pipe.
Oh, it's great. Ugh, and that's what I love about it. And the thing about the movie is it does not look its budget. It looks much higher budget than it actually is. They did such a good job with the cinematography and all that. Budget was only $82,510.
Yeah.
Less than $1,000, and it churned out this amazing thing. Oh, but no, we need to throw millions of dollars at Marvel movies. sorry, that's a rant for another time.
That's a different filler episode, yes. Damn it.
We'll get to that one.
Also, all the actors, super into it. They were all very happy to be on this film.
That's so cool. You can definitely tell. That's so cool.
Yeah, if you can, see The Void. It's great.
Yes.
And then next, we got a break with Lucky Number 11. the most chaotic of the episodes.
Oh my god. I love...
Because of the edit.
I loved what you did with it. It was so fucking chaotic. So chaotic. And the movie itself is a lot of fun. I'd still give it a 7 out of 10, honestly. I had a fun time with Lucky Number 11.
I get it.
But hey... That would be funny if you gave it a 7 out of 10 on Letterboxd that said, like, 11 out of 10.
Yeah.
They'd do something like that.
Or, like, make the horse.
Yeah.
Only real note I have here is we recorded that episode 469 days ago when I mentioned Cameron to make the audio version of Gravity Falls.
And that was done through the power of math.
That was, and Google.
Yes.
Anyway, Heathers.
Yeah, I was going to say, moving right on from Lucky Number 11. Fun fucking movie, go see it. Heathers, Jesus Christ. Oh. If you go in as blind as possible, basically like I did, it hits you pretty hard, but I loved it. It was great.
I do love that on the Blu-ray, they don't give anything away. Looks like a... high school comedy.
Yeah, it's so great how they even, like, in the menus and stuff, they pull a bait and switch because it just looks like a normal high school comedy. Nothing at all to go wrong.
A behind the scenes with the episode, if you look at the YouTube version, there is a wall of text that appears during the opening joke that says, "This was supposed to be funnier, but I'm tired." That was true.
Yeah.
I was, when this episode was edited, I was in finals at the time, and it needed to come out that Friday or that Wednesday. And the day before, I spent about 7 hours editing a fucking project for class, and frankly, I did not feel like doing the joke we wanted to, which would have involved, like, a very cheap, overlay of, like, a gun in my hand and, a big... I think a fake splatter for shooting Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was this idea to make it look, to have that joke of, like, it looking so cheap it becomes a double joke. I just didn't want to. I really didn't. I had 7 hours the other day, and I think that was one of the longer episodes of this movie month. I was just, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
I am getting this done. And just putting it out there. So yeah, that's the explanation for the opening joke text log. Other than that, again, not much to add on the movie.
Yeah.
We did a lot of good coverage this fucking movie month.
We did. I felt really good about that.
Which it always feels weird. Because, like, there's episodes where it's like, yeah, we covered everything, and there are some of the shortest episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of them are less than 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Ghost Protocol, that wasn't Movie Month, but it's like, we really enjoyed that movie. We covered a lot of stuff. 36-minute episode.
Yep.
Speaking of good movies covered, the final one of Mandy.
Yes. Oh my goodness. This Mandy was probably honestly my favorite of the whole Movie Month.
Shh, that's a later segment.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. I didn't know. But
kind of.
Yeah. But yeah, no. Fucking Mandy was such a surprise to me, and I loved just again the style of the movie, the cinematography, and just how trippy it went. Oh, it's basically just a high budget experimental film, and I loved it because of that.
Yeah, even the director was saying that the plot doesn't really matter here. It's more of an emotional journey.
Yes. And that's the thing. Like, it has this really slow, like, very experimental opening. And then the second half just gets metal as fuck.
Metal as fuck, dude.
Oh, it's so cool.
Only real behind-the-scenes fact I have is two of the biggest fights, I forget the second one, but one of them being the chainsaw fight, that was only shot in a day.
No shit.
Yeah, two of the biggest fights only had one day to shoot.
Wow.
But, which, if you don't know, doing fight scenes, you shouldn't do that. You need to choreograph, make sure no one gets hurt, but they were safe, it's just they needed to rush it.
Wow, that's interesting.
And also, the pin from earlier, the thing I found funny looking at behind the scenes of this is everyone behind the movie thinks it's a lot deeper and has this deep emotional impact. And then there's me who will sit through it. It's like, and Nick Cage have chainsaw go brrr.
Right. Yeah. You said like they came across as like not really pretentious. That's a strong word for it. But like slightly like, oh, this is so deep.
Yeah, deeper than it probably comes across to most viewers.
Yeah.
And the reason I had the pin is because you could say I got a bit pretentious about Mind Games themes, and now here I'm calling someone slightly pretentious for thinking deeply of their movie. Yeah. It's a fun full circle thing.
And a couple fun facts about Mandy is the weapon forged by him was based on the F from the logo for an extreme metal band called Celtic Frost.
Yeah, because this movie's fucking metal as fuck.
Yeah. And the song Starless by, you've probably heard of them, the English prog rock band King Crimson, plays over the opening credits. It's taken from their 1974 album Red, which is also the name of Nick Cage's character.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's a fun little...
Also, a reminder, you have to thank Elijah Wood for this movie.
Yeah!
he runs... Spectre Films. They make a bunch of weird horror movies.
Oh right, and he does that. Who does one... I thought he did A24. Who does A24 again?
I don't know who runs A24.
I confused Elijah Wood with that. Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah, no, he has Spectre Vision.
Yes.
And he's actually the one who also helped Nick Cage see Over the Black Rainbow, I think was the movie before this. Which is by the same director and apparently even more experimental than Mandy.
Yeah, Beyond the Black Rainbow, you're right.
Beyond, that's it. And that gave Nick Cage nightmares and it made him want to be in this movie.
Nice! Because that's the thing, you said like Nick Cage like 100% fought to be in the movie, right?
Oh yeah, and he was originally supposed to be the cult leader, but he really wanted to be Red.
Yes, so it ended up being a great choice because they're both actors in both roles do amazing.
Also, the actress who played Mandy was the director's first choice.
Yep. So. Andrea Riceborough.
And from behind the scenes stuff I saw, Nick Cage is still seemingly a very nice guy.
Yeah. That's the thing. I've heard just from people he's a very stand-up person, so that's cool.
Very stand-up, but also brutally honest sometimes.
Yes, yes.
Because I had a teacher who actually worked with him.
Ah.
And it was during the time when Nick Cage was super in debt. And he showed up to set, but in his contract, he specifically said he had to be paid $1 million up front. And due to bank and tech issues, it wasn't there. So he literally just hopped back on his plane and went back to Vegas for a day till the money went through and then came back.
No shit.
Yeah, he technically skipped the first day of shooting.
I mean, fair. You're technically breaching the contract, so...
He didn't yell or anything. He was just like, okay, where's my payment? Oh, it's gonna be a day late. Alrighty then.
And then just walked away.
Then just flew on back home.
Yeah. I am slightly jealous of your college experience because you actually got to see a real film set and actually see some people who were like in the industry. And don't get me wrong, I had teachers that had been in Hollywood, knew famous people and all that, but you actually got to like be there near a set, which is so cool. If you guys didn't know out there.
Yeah. DePaul University. I'll slightly promote it, but we'll still fuck you over because it's an American university.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with that. It's more just the loan companies that are shitty as fuck.
Well, DePaul could also charge less if they wanted to.
Yup.
So, yeah, yes. Not much to fix on this episode either. But for movie month, what is the weakest and why is it running scared?
Yeah, it's definitely running scared just because it's a very middle of the road movie. Like, I respect what the director was trying to do at the time, make a gritty action movie in the time of PG-13 shaky cam schlock. And I respect like kind of the themes he was going for, but it didn't really come across well. And it's meh. It's fine. It's not bad.
I'll still give massive credit for the Hansel and Gretel section of the movie.
That, yeah.
That's fucked up, but also it feels good by the end.
It does. It does. I'll give it that.
actually, I forgot a fun fact.
Ooh.
This one's a fucked up fact, actually.
Oh, boy.
The Hansel and Gretel scene, I'm not going to say specifically what happens. If you listened to the episode we talked about it, if you didn't, lucky you.
Yep.
They based that set off of actual, like, they made sure it was crime scene accurate.
Oh, fuck me. Really?
They went by what actual other crime scenes were like in order to make sure things were correct.
That just makes my skin crawl.
Yeah.
That is really
makes the scene so much worse to note that isn't an over fictionalization.
It really does, though.
It was actually that scene was the reason the main actress stayed for the movie, because she wanted that scene.
Really? Oh, good. With her taking the gun and basically, yeah.
with the line of, "I heard shooting."
Yeah! That's such a badass moment. She calls the police, yep, and then like says, "I heard someone shooting," hangs up, and then just kills him. It's so badass.
And I know you say your best is Mandy.
Yeah, it's a hard choice for me between that and Bad Times, but I'd probably go with Mandy.
I think I like Bad Times more, just and literally the only thing that makes it get across, like puts it slightly above for me, is Mandy's slow start. I don't hate that at all. It's like a beautiful scene and it's nice build up to the revenge.
Yeah.
But Bad Times right away has the wittiness and the fun dialogue getting you like invested in the story.
Also 100% fair. And see, it's interesting because it's the length of Bad Times that I'd probably put Mandy over, is because I'd watch Mandy more than Bad Times just because it's 3 hours long and takes so long to rewatch.
Yeah, but I feel Bad Times, since it goes so fast, it's kind of like Fight Club, where, yeah, true, it's a long movie, but I can rewatch it.
Very true, and I can easily do that as well, so.
Oh, actually, another thing on Bad Times is the pacing of the movie was also supposed to be kind of symbolic of the 60s.
How so?
Where at the start, it's a lot calmer, people were feeling, you know, sort of love, and then things get bad by the like, by the end, you had a lot of political scandals going on and things just getting bad.
Oh, worse. I can 100% see that. And have you heard of the Altamont disaster? Have I told you about that all or something?
I don't think I have, actually.
Basically, the anti-Woodstock at the time, because, you know, Woodstock was 1969, this huge outpouring of love and peace, and we had, like, a huge population of hippies showing all that, and it was... The disaster at Altamont kind of stopped the whole peace, love, and thing of the 60s, and it kind of did come to a grinding halt after that, because they tried to put on another Woodstock, and they even got Michael Lang, who was the original maker of Woodstock, to try and back it, but then he pulled out. There was a bunch of issues. They're going to have it at this location, but then they didn't, and then they ended up having it at the Altamont Speedway. And needless to say, it was a disaster because not only were people not well fed, not well watered, there wasn't really much vending wise, but they made the mistake of hiring Hell's Angels as security.
Right. Now I remember this. Yes.
And they made the mistake of paying them entirely in beer.
Why would you get your security drunk?
Yep. So needless to say, a bunch of fights broke out. Tensions were high between the crowd. Mick Jagger tried to calm it down, but to no avail. And it ended up in the death of someone by stabbing. So,
Jesus.
Yep. And that kind of harkened the end of the 60s. And that was when, like, you know, a bunch of political scandals happened. I think Watergate happened a few years later. And that was when that kind of fell apart. So I can kind of see that through the pacing for sure.
And then Nam.
And then there was, yep, Vietnam, yep. And I guess that makes sense, too, with the one character being basically the killing machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. But yeah, great fucking
How
movie.
Many people have you killed?
How many? Do you say, like, several hundred or something?
Oh, yeah, he killed, like, 190, 200, something like that.
Something asinine like that. It's like, holy shit. No wonder.
Such a good moment.
Oh, it is.
I don't want to kill again. How many have you killed?
Yeah. Just flashback to that one scene. Just wakes up and everyone around him is dead. So.
In carnage count. When are we getting a count of,
Yeah, bad times. Bad times. Right? And the funny thing is, you know, it's a bunch of group of people that he didn't really count entirely, so it's possible he could have killed more.
That's true, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It just reminds me, oh, God, well, that's spoilers for Archer, so I don't know if I want to say that since we aren't technically covering it. So,
true.
Yeah, you know the scene I'm talking about, right?
I know exactly what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
it reminds me of that in a way. And then I don't remember much from that point onward.
I do wonder where that plot line would have gone in, I think it was 7?
Yeah, if the actor hadn't sadly passed away.
Yeah. Anyway, what time are we at?
We're doing good. We're at 49 minutes.
That sounds like proper filler.
Yup, so... Yeah, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Recap, and then, we do this basically just every time we finish a wheel, so just in case there's anything
so
we missed. Or
probably
any...
next year we'll have the TV short series wheel.
Yes, so and it's just in case we missed anything, or if there's anything else we'd like to add, or if our opinion on said movie or TV show has changed, so.
Yeah, if all the cast turns out to be horrible fucking people. We can correct it and say stop watching the show.
Exactly. Yup. So yeah, I think that's about it, huh? No wheel spin or anything, so...
what move? Oh, You Were Never Really Here should be the next move.
Yes, so stay tuned for that uplifting movie.
You questioned the wheel and it inspired you.
Yeah.
And then Preacher Season 2 after that.
Yes, so.
Okay, get out.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Cinema Roulette. If you want to interact with the show more, you can follow us on Twitter, @RouletteCinema. If you wish to follow our hosts, Justin is @JKPancake on Twitter, and Cameron is @CameronPixInc. On Twitter. If you wish to watch a video version of the podcast, it can be found on the YouTube channel CamCam. Thanks again to Teller's Place for making the base art for all of our thumbnails. And if you enjoyed the show, please remember to subscribe or rate on whatever podcast app you use.